The Drive on TSN 1200, AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, Cam Clement. Tavon Smith is back with the Ottawa Red Blacks. Canada's following the IOC lead on Russia and Belarus for the 2024 Olympics. That's about all you need to know today. You know what you need to know? You need to know that CJ's bringing it with this audio that he alerted to me to earlier on Jesse Palmer.
Ottawa guy.
Ottawa guy.
Makes it even better.
Was on the Rich Eisen show, and he was asked about his time on The Bachelor, and some pretty good stuff here. Here's Jesse Palmer from the Rich Eisen show.
Great to see you.
Yeah, you too.
When did they first reach out to you to be The Bachelor? How did that happen?
I forget the exact timing of it. You know, the role came open, and then it was like a few months after that, I think the conversation had started.
Yeah.
And it just sort of happened organically. It was sort of in a time frame from a scheduling standpoint that sort of worked with some of the other things I was doing.
Like quarterbacking the New York Giants?
You mean when I was The Bachelor?
Yes, The Bachelor.
So the timing worked out for that really great. The show was super new.
That's right.
I was trying to wrap my head around what it was about, but I'm someone that never says no, and I love experiences. The best part of that, the least fun part of that experience, though, was being driven to Newark Airport to fly to start filming.
Yes.
And my agent calls and says, you got a new head coach on the Giants. You got to call him and tell him what you're doing. I said, okay, fine. Who is it? He goes, Tom Coughlin just got it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, dude.
How does that conversation
I'm like,
go?
Dude. But Jim Fossil was cool with it. I remember being on the practice field with Jim Fossil, and he was like, how many women are going to be on the show? Everybody was good. And then I get the phone call on the way to Newark Airport. You have to call Tom Coughlin.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Okay. So I start sweating.
I'm sweating.
I'm having like palpitations.
I'm sweating.
And I get the phone. I dial in over to the football office. Coach Coughlin answers the phone. And I'm like, hi, Coach.
This is the first time you've ever.
I mean, I had talked to him, I think, at my pro day. There was a quick run in at the University of Florida with the Gators.
Yes.
And I'm like, hey, Coach, my name's Jesse Palmer. I'm one of the quarterbacks on the team. And I start trying to get into like, what, how do you explain The Bachelor to Tom Coughlin? I'm spewing verbal diarrhea and just like all over myself, and I'm trying to explain it to him, and I'm waiting. There's no answer. He's never interjecting. Okay. Like, there's nothing. And finally, after like a weird, awkward pause, will you be back in time for minicamp? Yeah. Yeah. We finished filming in February.
Yeah.
Well, then why are you calling me? I'll see you. Go blue, Coach. Go blue. Put the phone down. Shoot the show. Come back. Fast forward months later. Show is airing.
Yes.
We're in the Meadowlands. We're in a stretch line.
Yeah.
Coughlin's walking in the stretch line. He walks by Tiki Barber. And he's like, Tiki, remember, 5 points of pressure. Can't put the ball on the ground. He walks by Jeremy Shockey. He's like, remember now. In line. And you're releasing option route. Work the leverage. And then he walks by me. And he goes, Jessica?
No, he did not.
You picked Jessica? So, like, that was essentially my reality. Living through being The Bachelor and playing for the general, Tom Coughlin.
I am literally crying, Jesse. No
way. It was.
So he knew who you chose? Like, what?
We never expected it. You have to understand, too, like, at the time, this is like, what, 2004. So it's Eli's rookie year. It's Tom's first year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, reality TV was new.
Was Kurt there yet?
Yeah, Kurt was there. He had to be a part of it. I mean, it was, and so, like, reality TV was new. Real World had just started. And so,
right.
I'm trying to explain to the guys in the locker room what's going on.
Yeah.
What the show is, the premise. And they're like, wait, so you're going on a show to to find a wife? You live in New York City. And I'm like, you play in the Giants. And I'm like, I know, but it's this show and it's going to be great. And so I would we'd have these watch parties together with all the guys.
Is that right?
Just get out ahead of it. And like, I think back then the show was like an hour long and they would essentially just laugh at me for about an hour. And then you'd get into the locker room the next day.
Oh my.
And then a dude would come by and he'd be like, my wife and I watched last night.
Yeah.
Hey, this girl Cindy you're taking a one-on-one date with, watch out, dude. She's crazy. Don't do it. And then another, and then you get the
other
guy. Did
you tell him it's been shot already?
Yeah, I'm like, thanks for something that would have been good to know about 4 months ago when I was shooting it. Information that would have been good to me yesterday. And then there's like the rookie like linebacker from Wisconsin who's like, did you pick Cindy? Is she still single? Would she ever?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, dude.
Oh, my.
Challenge flag. So essentially like the experience of being the Bachelor that year. Oh, and if you think back to like the characters we had in the locker room, mm-hmm. The 2004 New York Giant locker room is one of the greatest locker rooms of all time. We weren't a very good football team, mm-hmm. but our locker room is like in the Hall of Fame in terms of the personalities in the room. We had so much fun with it. And ironically, Tom Coughlin somehow knew.
All right, there's Jesse Palmer from the Rich Eisen Show.
He's such a good storyteller. Like I said, if you've got a chance to, you've heard it now, but the way like he looks at the camera and everything, like while he's telling the story, just so good. He's become such a both of them, Rich Eisen and Jesse Palmer, such great communicators, great broadcasters, and I thought that was some pretty class A. Storytelling there by Jesse Palmer. Good stuff.
Yeah, you can only imagine, right? That phone call to Tom Coughlin.
The general. Why are you calling me?
Good stuff. Dwayne from Baskin Robbins says, hey guys, my sister and I used to babysit Jesse and his older of his two brothers when we were teenagers. Everything about his career has been a little otherworldly because of that. Great kid, great parents. That's Dwayne from Baskin Robbins.
Yeah.
Never actually met him, but I have friends that still keep in touch with Jesse that played football with him, and they swear by him as a great guy.
Yeah, had the occasion to meet with him a few times. One of them was he had a golf tournament here in Ottawa a couple of times. Just Jesse Palmer's golf tournament. He would bring in a bunch of the Giants. And I can't remember the name of the assistant coach. But anyway, it winds up that I get a foursome in the tournament. So we're going to play with, I think it was a, could probably look it up, defensive coach, I believe played at Notre Dame from the Giants. He's going to be kind of like the air quotes celebrity guy in our group. So I get Tim Baines to play, and now I got one other spot open. So I start making calls, and I just like leave messages. What do we got to be out here, like 4:20?
Yeah, we got about later. 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay, so I'm just calling around, leaving messages with everybody, saying, look, I've got an open spot in Jesse Palmer's golf tournament. First person to call me back and says they can play gets the spot. I leave, I don't know, half a dozen messages with different people. First guy to call back, Claude Julien. Claude's here in Ottawa. Claude's like, hey, perfect. I have nothing to do. I can be that guy. And I'm like,
Who was he coaching at the time?
The Habs.
Okay.
So I'm like, you're just like our buddy Claude. You don't have to be there as Claude Julien, coach of the Canadians or anything else. Very low profile. Just come out, have a good day. So Claude comes out to play with us, and we get to meet the defensive coach. This is our buddy Claude. Tim is the sports editor of The Sun. I'm a hockey writer. So we get out on the golf course and we're playing, you know, like a couple of holes in. Now we get to a tee where we're standing around, and the coach from the Giants is like, so Tim, how long have you been the sports editor? And Tim tells his story, and he asked me about, you know, what teams I cover and all this stuff. And he turns to Claude and is like, so Claude, what do you do? And Claude's just kind of like standing there. I said, Claude's coach of the Montreal Canadiens. And this guy was just like, what? Yes, our friend Claude coaches the Montreal Canadiens. So they hit it off like right after from then on, they were just kind of like telling coaching stories and all that kind of stuff. But I just savor that moment so much when the guy was like, hey, Claude, what do you do?
We've all had moments like that too, right?
Claude's just kind of like sheepish. And I pipe up. Yeah, Claude's the coach of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, we've all had moments like that where you get introduced to somebody that a lot of people would know.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Oh.
There we go.
A bit of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, good stuff. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to soccer and John Herdman. Looked like he was going to New Zealand. Now it looks like he's staying, or is he? We'll touch on that saga when we come back with Brennan Dunlop as we continue with The Drive on TSN 1200. It's The Drive on TSN 1200. AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, our producer Cam Clement. Let's go back to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline for our next guest. It's the founder of Canadian Soccer Daily, host of World Cup coverage here on TSN Radio, author of D-Row My Life. It's Brendan Dunlop. Brendan, how you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, man? Nice to be back on the show with you.
Yeah, great to have you again as well. Well, interesting day yesterday. And, yeah. I mean, first a story comes out and it seemed like maybe John Herdman's going to New Zealand. Then, you know, dueling press releases with, you know, Earl Cochrane and John Herdman, all saying that Herdman is committed to Canada and he's got a contract until the World Cup in 2026. What did you make of everything that you saw and heard over the course of the last 48 hours?
Yeah, it was a kind of a roller coaster 14 hours, which Canadian soccer fans are pretty used to in general, right? I think that, you know, the unique experience that it is being a fan of Canadian soccer and having followed Canada soccer as an organization, whether you are just as a watching fan or having worked in the media like you and I, you know, you as time kind of goes by and there was no response from Canada soccer, your mind kind of wanders, right? It was very easy for both fans and media to kind of let that spiral. So the fact that Canada soccer came out with that triple-headed statement, you know, a very direct message, very on brand of John Herdman and very clear and direct that, look, he's had suitors and, you know, as he said there, when you are successful, there are people that come looking and come calling, right? That's a natural part of the whole process. I don't think anyone at all is surprised at that. I just think everyone was surprised at the certainty in which it seemed that New Zealand report was delivered. And the fact that New Zealand is a program that's not on the same trajectory that Canada is. And if to lose him to, you know, at a time where the World Cup is coming here and Canada's on this upward trajectory that he's so very much been a part of, to, you know, go back to his old lover in the New Zealand Football Federation, I think that left a lot of Canadian fans, you know, kind of uncomfortable. But as we said there, you know, that the triple-headed statement with Earl Cochrane and President Nick Bontis coming out and supporting the fact that John Herdman was here to stay and there was no need or expression on his end to want to part ways now, that was definitely a big sigh of relief. So it was a roller coaster of about 12 hours there or so, but now we can look forward to, you know, the next part of the planning of the Canadian men's program.
So I'm coming at this as very much a casual soccer fan, particularly when it comes to the off-the-pitch machinations of what goes on. He's under contract in Canada. Like, how does it even get to New Zealand talking to him? I can understand New Zealand having an interest, but he's under contract, so I mean, what role would Soccer Canada have in this? Is there no such thing as tampering within FIFA or anything? Like, how did it even get to the point where New Zealand thought that he was coming there to coach?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And soccer in general, which makes soccer very interesting and for a lot of North American fans confusing, is that money kind of dictates everything. And money can break contracts and therefore replace trades. How, you know, in the NHL we're used to body for body, right? With in soccer, it's money changes everything. So usually there's some behind the scenes compensation or conversations about how that would go to break such contracts. And then oftentimes, too, you know, the player or the coach in this situation can ultimately have the power if he truly did want that position and truly did want to take up that offer, whether it was New Zealand or whether it was maybe from a Premier League club or an English Championship side that have certainly been knocking on doors as well. I know for certain English Championship clubs had looked to interview him before the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. So it's not that foreign in the soccer world, but this is a situation where a lot of people would have been surprised for that job in particular if he had, in fact, left Canada for that job.
I'm also a big fan of the smell test. And the smell test in this would tell me that he likely wanted to go. New Zealand wanted him.
Huh.
But New Zealand wasn't willing to pay what Soccer Canada wanted to let him go. That's what I take out of this, the way it all finally settled out. That's how I feel it went down. Total speculation on my part.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things, right? This is the beauty of being our side of the business. Right? Yeah. We know a little bit, but you never really know, but it leads to some great conversations. And I do think that, you know, for an organization like that, and Canada Soccer would be in this situation, had been in this situation in the past, there is a bit of a premium that you do have to pay. There is a bit of a extra that you have to compensate to sort out, you know, what you want. And I do think that in this case, money wouldn't have been enough. I really think that you know, John Herdman is fully committed to what he's building here, truly enjoys it. I know that, and he's been on record several times and saying how much his family does love being in Canada. And you know, I talk about the club situation, which is something that he's spoken about wanting to one day coach club football. But it's got to be the right situation because it's so short-term and fickle in club soccer. And if it wasn't a situation where, you know, he truly felt he could make as big of an impact or stay a long time, he wouldn't do it. And then also hosting a World Cup is very different. He's had this experience with the women's team when Canada hosted the Women's World Cup in 2015. And it's a different degree with the Men's World Cup. And it's also a different time for soccer in this country and for soccer as a sport. So I truly believe that's something he really, really wants to be a part of. Is there something else that could, you know, lure him or turn his head? I mean, for all of us, there's something. But money wouldn't have been the only situation. I think there would have been a lot more to it. And to me, New Zealand didn't tick those boxes.
So here's how it is, Brennan, for my smell test. Like I,
and I love again, it. Go.
Part speculation, but part just, you know, sometimes you get information, right? And you're putting two and two together, and sometimes you're coming up with four, and sometimes it doesn't add up, right? But from my perspective, I kind of sense that maybe this was a bit of a leverage play from John Herdman, whether it was to get a better contract, or I just wonder, right, there's still that cloud hanging over Canada Soccer's head when it comes to no deal with the players, whether it's men or women. You know, we were all waiting for something to happen before the World Cup. Nothing's happened yet. And to me, until that's fully resolved, I wonder if that played a part, whether it was new contract, but it feels like it was maybe a bit of a leverage play to say, look, there is interest elsewhere. I'd like to stay, but get your crap in order so that I'm fully committed to this thing.
Yeah, that was a quick reaction on Twitter too, both just to the news that potentially he was leaving for New Zealand. And then even after the confirmation, there's a lot of people thought, you know, this just feels like Canada Soccer, you know, needed a reminder that they have someone that is very coveted and they have a lot of things to figure out before this World Cup comes. That's something that they know. And there's a lot of changes kind of happening behind the scenes that I think will shake things out over the course of this year and in the lead up to what is hopefully going to be a major tune-up for Canada, the United States, and Mexico is participating in that 2024 Copa America. You know, that really is on the field and off going to be such a massive stepping stone for the three CONCACAF giants, but particularly Canada, who haven't been at that level, to show that they have progressed and that they are a bigger team on the pitch and a bigger federation off of the pitch as well. So there are a lot of things that need to happen, and it's, you know, it wouldn't be beyond the realm of possibility that there was some type of a bumper deal for his current contract that runs through 2026. It's a little bit sweeter than it was a couple of weeks ago, but honestly, Canada Soccer would not be in the situation that it's in right now if John Herdman hadn't, you know, come to Canada when he did to take up the women's job in 2011, and making the move over to the men's side to take the entire program to another level. So I, for one, am very happy to see that he is in fact staying through, at least for now. But has proclaimed he's staying through to 2026.
Did you have any sense at all that there was any kind of serious introspection within the ranks of Herdman's bosses about the performance at the World Cup, or was it was just basically business as usual? Was there ever going to be any kind of like real postmortem in terms of the performance and some of the decisions that were made?
There's always a review process, right? I think to be any type of competent organization, you have to have that regardless of what the expectations were set or the result in the end. And I'm sure that there was some dialogue about, you know, that was large around what can we do differently. But I do not believe that changing the manager was one of them. I know that that was a suggestion by some on the outside. There was quite a few media conversations about how this proved that, you know, Herdman, with all the tournament experience he had, wasn't at this level in terms of the Men's World Cup. And was a step behind. And if the program wanted to go farther, maybe they need someone with more Men's World Cup experience. I disagree with that. I think that he's been someone who's shown he's always learned from his adversity and has been able to take himself farther and take the game farther, as well as take his team farther, excuse me. So I do think that, you know, Canada Soccer have the right guy. I think that they know that. But I do imagine that there were some conversations about, you know, what are some things to do differently, as I'm sure John has had in his postmortem. You know, he's someone that's very open about talking how hard he is on himself. This is a guy who's always learning. This is not someone that kicks back and, you know, went on a vacation. And I hope that he took some time and enjoyed himself. But he's someone who was right back into the books and studying and learning. He's a constant, you know, learner and self-improver. So I do honestly feel as though he really is committed to 2026 and the next steps. And I think that anyone who spends time around him knows that as well.
Talking soccer with Brendan Dunlop from Canadian Soccer Daily. And yeah, it's interesting because you've got some people that are kind of like, okay, if he leaves, good riddance. But he's done so much for soccer in this country, women's side, certainly on the men's side. And I feel like 2026 is a long ways away. And while you can always do what Morocco did and find somebody 4 months before, you know, the dream name, of course, is Carlo Ancelotti, because he's talked about wanting to manage Canada one day, and the fact that he lives here in the off season and is married to someone from Vancouver. But in the end, you've got 3 years to get there. And to me, I want to see, the beauty is we're going to see, as you mentioned, Copa America in 2024. Now, they still have to qualify for it, but it's a major tournament on par with the Euros. You still have a couple of gold cups as well. You're not going to find somebody like that over the course of the next 3 years. This is a guy who's committed to the program. He's done real good things in getting other people to commit to the program. There's some other dual nationals like Daniel Jebison that you'd love to be a part of it. And I think he's the right guy. And look, if things don't work out over the next 3 years and three major tournaments, you can always make a late change like a Morocco did. But in the meantime, I can't think of a better option for the here and now to lead us through these next few years before we get to 2026, and you can always make the decision if he's not the guy. You have three more tournaments to judge that between now and then.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the Canada job, and much like the United States job, they're truly unique in comparison to other programs around the world, where there is kind of an infrastructure, whether it's fully successful or not at all times through the year, there's an infrastructure that allows that role to be a bit more interchangeable. And I'm glad you used Morocco as a very good example. We see this a lot with African countries as well, where really the team is sort of set and the manager that ends up pulling the strings of the tournament can be changed in the last second. And as long as he's got the team on board, there's the potential for some real success. And Morocco's success is undeniable. One of the greatest World Cup stories ever, truly. But the jobs that the CONCACAF head coaches have, there's so much more to it, because it's a constant selling job. You're selling players, as you mentioned, to come and be doing nationals. You're selling players who are committed to continue to sacrifice their time and away from their families and commit to this program and these camps traveling across the world, where, you know, European players just don't have to do that travel sense. So there's a certain type of person and personality that fits the role of a Canadian men's national team head coach and a U.S. men's national team head coach. And these glamour names of Jose Mourinho and Carlo Ancelotti, it sounds great from a purely, you know, football perspective. But could you imagine Carlo Ancelotti doing the camera ops in Edmonton? Could you imagine Carlo Ancelotti going down to El Salvador and trying to convince Alfonso Davies that he needs to play in this Nations League game against Guadeloupe? Like, I just don't think that Carlo wants to do that, you know?
We can still dare to dream, though.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I wrote for CanadianSoccerDaily.com about Zinedine Zidane and how, you know, I don't actually believe it was a true offer, a fully thought-out negotiation process, as the United States program was rumored to be chasing Zinedine Zidane. But worth a phone call, worth the conversation.
Yeah.
And certainly at the time, worth the distraction for U.S. soccer to have put it out there. But I said the same thing about Zidane, you know, making those trips and, you know, watching all those MLS games. It's just, there's just some men that are suited for roles like that. And these two positions are truly unique in the international soccer space.
A couple more for you, Brendan, on the men's side. And then I've got a women's one for you. Just, I mean, obviously a lot of focus on Alfonso Davies right now at Bayern Munich, Jonathan David at Lille. You've got Alistair Johnston at Celtic. You've got Tejon Buchanan at Bruges. Kyle Larin's made the move to La Liga and scored on the weekend for Valladolid. And of course, Stephane Oustakiou doing his thing at Porto. Who's the next Canadian that you expect is going to make a move to a big club or a young Canadian to watch right now?
That's a good point. It's amazing that we have several to choose from. You know, it's incredible. It wasn't that long ago where you were talking about some player in a league that you couldn't watch without an illegal internet streaming link, or, you know, show up at some bar that had paid for the overseas subscription to be able to maybe catch them once on a Saturday. You've got every weekend, you've got five or six leagues of guys to pay attention to, which is super exciting. My standout right now is Stephane Oustakiou. I do think that he's a player that can move from Porto at some point in the next 2 years. I found it very surprising that he took the number 46 shirt when he went there last year. And it seemed as though, you know, he wasn't high on Sergio Conceição's list. And now he is undroppable, which Canadian fans know as he's, you know, one of the first names on the team sheet for John Herdman. Went healthy, of course, and has been so at Porto. You look at the way that they sell in Portugal. Benfica has made a very good job of not being just a soccer team and a sporting organization, but a bank, the largest bank in Portugal. Porto are not far behind as being the second largest bank in Portugal, given the economic situation over the last 10 years. I would not be surprised if in the summer you're seeing links for Stephane Oustakiou to some of the bigger sides in European football. Some of the names that were amongst the Super League clubs, I feel like would be very wise to tap on that door. I think Tejon Buchanan, that's a move that still is looming to happen. Jonathan David's going to be the big move in the summer. How much I think he goes for is still very much up in the air. Lille paid $30 million for him. I love that Ismaël Koné is at Watford right now. I know that was quite a big move, but you know, he went on record referring to it as a stepping stone. And for as offended as a lot of fan bases might be, I think Watford understand they've got a player that has tremendous ambition. And they are a club with ambition as well, and not a club that are in the top six in England. They're looking to get back in the Premier League with him in that midfield. You know, still early days for him. I know he had struggle in his last time out, but I think that's a player with tremendous upside. So it's exciting that there's a few to constantly keep our eye on. Kamal Miller was someone, AJ, that really impressed me in Qatar. I know you as well. So there's a player that I wouldn't be surprised giving an opportunity overseas in Europe. And Sam Adekubi is someone we don't talk about enough, who's playing at Hayatspor in Turkey. And there's a player that I think is destined for a bigger club and a bigger league in the very near future. So there's a few for you.
Last one, big year for the women. Women's World Cup this summer. Bev Priestman believes her squad has a 1,000,000% chance of being on the podium in Australia. What do you make of, we're used to the kind of this hubris on the men's side with John Herdman, with his confidence. But what do you make of those comments from the coach of the defending Olympic champs?
they do have the exact same accent, and of course, she learned a lot from John Irvin. So I do love that, you know, Bev Priest has been able to take some of those pointers that and some of those habits we expect from John Herdman and do it in her own way. And I think, you know, this team is very much their own team. And what's exciting is that this team is very different from the team that won gold medal in Tokyo, you know, 18 months ago, 2 years ago by the time that the World Cup rolls around in Australia. And a lot of people seem to be overlooking Canada. Part of that has to do with the fact that the Olympic tournament, you just have to be the best of eight teams. And the World Cup is much more difficult. For 32 teams, you really are getting all the best teams in the world. You didn't even have the best teams in Europe at the Olympics. So the opposition in front of Canada wasn't as strong as it will be at the World Cup, which is why I think, you know, Vegas and Ladbrokes are very easy to dismiss the gold medalists as plus 2,500, I think, odds to win it all. I do believe that they very much have a chance to be a semifinalist, and I think that that is absolutely the goal for this program. But we've seen the gap growing, right, with these European teams who forever neglected and ignored women's soccer and didn't invest in it and treated it like a hobby or a side project, who now are pumping in millions and treating it like the business that football is. And that is only going to make the gap widen and make things more and more difficult for Canada to kind of keep pace. So this is truly an important tournament for the Canadian women's program, because performance and succeeding at this tournament will solidify what we in the football space know, that more investment and dedication is needed, but also to confirm that it's worth it. And for Canada to keep pace and be one of the leading women's programs, I do think that you know, success on the pitch is within reach in Australia, and I think that they will be semifinalists.
At Brendan_Dunlop on Twitter, and you can get all your Canadian soccer news, men, women, club scene, whatever, at Can Soccer Daily as well. Brendan Dunlop, always appreciate the time. Appreciate you joining us.
Appreciate you, man. Talk anytime.
Brendan Dunlop joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. It's the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Bottom line on John Herdman. You know what? It feels like, and this is the case in a lot of time, in a lot of situations, right? It feels like, you know, the marriage is not necessarily all rainbows and unicorns and all that, but he's here. And I think as long as he's here, he's going to be committed. And as long as he's committed and here, he's going to have those players committed and buying in as well. It's a big 3-year cycle here leading into the World Cup, because we need to see some growth, and we'll see. Like, the fact that now the concern was, CJ, that, okay, they're qualified for the World Cup, what now? But getting into Copa America, or having the ability to get into Copa America, it means these games in March against Honduras and Curacao means something, because you want to ensure you're staying in League A. And then Next Nations League, you have to qualify for the Copa America, which you should be able to do. But in this country, should hasn't always happened, right? So it means there's kind of always something to play for and keep motivated about. And that's why I think it's important, especially in the here and now, that John Herdman is here. All right, we'll take our break. At 5:05, Scott Rintoul is going to join us to talk about his very cool project about the West Coast Express and the Vancouver Canucks of the Morrison Naslund Bertuzzi vintage. Look forward to that as we continue with a drive here on this Thursday on TSN 1200. It's the drive on TSN 1200. AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, Cam Clement, crushing it with the tunes today. Corkin Canada writes, "Hey boys, funny story along the lines of CJ's Julian story. In the late 80s, I was 9 or 10 at the time and played hockey for Nepean. After a practice one night, my dad and I pop into Hurley's on Merivale for a bite to eat. My dad was pretty regular there, but a fairly new server is working. She sees my jacket, says, 'What position do you play?' I say, 'I'm a goalie.' She says, 'Oh, awesome. My brother's a goalie too.' My dad pipes up and says, 'Does he play for Nepean also?' She replies, 'No, he actually plays for the Chicago Blackhawks.' Both our jaws drop. It's Darren Pang's sister, Sherry. A couple weeks later, I even had a signed picture for me at the bar. That's from Cork,
that's awesome.
In Canada.
There you go, Sherry. There's a good there's a good yarn.
Yeah, love it.
Sherry's living in St. Louis now, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, she moved down there. Be close to Darren, I guess, right?
Awesome.
So, yeah. So we've got things going on from the media availabilities in Florida. A couple of quotes caught my eye because they're written out. They weren't quotes that I heard. So it's not my ear, folks. Don't get all bent out of shape. The quotes caught my eye.
Yeah, they're this for the All-Star Game media availability in Florida right now.
Yeah, and all our colleagues doing a pretty good job. Everybody's, you know, going to the guys who come from the teams which they cover. So Jeremy Rutherford covers the Blues for The Athletic. Big story, Vladimir Tarasenko, right? What's his future? Is he going to be hot at the trade deadline? There's been a lot of rumors. So Jeremy tweets, I just spoke to Vladimir Tarasenko and asked if he's thought about the NHL All-Star Game being the last time he represents the Blues on the big stage. Tarasenko's reply. Yes. Obviously, yes. Because even Vladdy don't know the future of Vladdy. There's only one guy who knows more than me, and his name is Doug Armstrong. I think that's the guy who you should talk about my future with the Blues. Vladdy invoking the third person.
Love it.
Oh, CJ loves that.
Aaron John loves it too.
Yeah, that's
see,
good.
When Aaron John never says AJ in the third person. Yeah, it's always Aaron John.
Yeah.
Aaron John really enjoyed that story, Christopher John.
That's a good quote from Tarasenko. Good for him. And the other one, I guess, of interest to Senators fans, I guess, who still have a soft spot in their heart for Erik Karlsson. He was asked about his post-playing career plans. And I guess that's where you wind up on All-Star Weekend, right? You wind up asking players about their future. Not much news that usually goes on there. Asked about his post-playing career living plans because he's Swedish, his wife is Canadian, and his kids are American. He said that's a decision that they'll make in 8 or 9 years. So I don't blame Erik Karlsson for talking about playing for another 8 or 9 years after the season that he's having this year. So he plans on sticking around for a while yet.
You think that's an off-season move?
That he gets dealt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And somebody's going to need to get creative. Doesn't that sound like a three-way type deal where everybody's going to be keeping back some salary for the team that finally gets them? And that team's going to have to be handing out the goodies like it's Halloween to each of the teams that you're going to keep a quarter of his salary. You're going to keep a quarter of his salary. Maybe you're going to keep a half of his salary.
Is there some sort of Jacob Chychrun deal three-way that can be worked out with some team? And Erik Karlsson?
That's an interesting thought, you'd think. Like, I think Jacob Chychrun's got a pretty reasonable deal, right? What's he at, 4.5?
Yeah, 4.6, I believe.
For a guy who gets you 20 goals, I mean, the question's always going to be about his healthy and his availability. But there aren't many D-men who can score in the league the way that he can. That's an interesting thought.
I guess my point is, would the Sharks maybe take Jacob Chychrun, give up Erik Karlsson, and Arizona would be able to, A, retain salary, right, in terms of the Karlsson deal. That's a perfect retaining salary type team, and then get picks and prospects, right?
Yeah.
The type of deal that Arizona would want in terms of Chychrun, but they would get.
So they could keep back part of Chychrun's deal and then keep back part of Karlsson's deal. Because clearly they want to move Chychrun. This sounds like it's all been the club's idea, right? It hasn't been Chychrun's idea. Although there have been, I guess, over the last few months, you know, contradictory stories about all that. But it seems like the club does want to move him along. And they could flip out Karlsson for more and hold back part of Karlsson's salary. Interesting.
Anyways, worth pondering. Do you expect a busy deadline? Like, I don't mean quantity. I mean, of course, there's going to be fifth round picks traded for.
It's just so tough now with
fourth line wingers and going number back six
to our,
defensemen.
Yeah, but, I mean, going back to our earlier conversation. Like, we can come back and talk about it later in the show. But how many teams are going to be buyers and how many are going to be sellers come the deadline? Like, I always think it's better when it's pretty clearly delineated who's in and who isn't, because then it creates more bodies that could be moving in the marketplace. If you've got a whole bunch of teams because of parity thinking that they've still got a chance to make the playoffs and you've only got a half a dozen teams that think they're out of it, then you might get a bidding war, which is interesting, but I just don't feel like there's that big of an inventory of potential guys that can get moved, because the vast majority of teams think they've still got a chance and they want to add. They don't want to subtract.
We'll take our top hour break. When we come back, CFRA news update. And then we'll bring in Scott Rintoul. Very cool project that he's got about the West Coast Express in Vancouver. This is The Drive on TSN 1200.